Greetings and welcome to this session on new file server features of Windows Server 2008. I'm Sunny Brock, and in this session, we'll discuss how the new file server features in Microsoft Windows Server 2008 will help you more easily and reliably share your files on the network. Let's start by taking a look at the areas we will cover in more detail. The new file server features are a collection of technologies that, when configured on Windows Server 2008, make it the ideal platform for sharing files in any size organization. We'll cover how Windows Server 2008 will simplify and enhance the use of storage area networks, SANs, improve the reliability and ease of backing up files with server backup, and promote overall scalability, reliability, and performance with enhancements to the Server Message Block, SMB protocol, and the new Transactional Infrastructure Optimization, IO model. With new features that support smooth transitions between online and offline access, large heterogeneous files, background synchronization, client-side encryption, and more, offline file functionality has been greatly improved in Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008. In Microsoft Windows Server 2008, the improvements to failover clusters, formerly known as server clusters, are aimed at simplifying clusters, making them more secure, and enhancing cluster stability. Distributed File System Replication, or DFSR, the Distributed File System Replication Service is a multi-master replication engine that is used to keep folders synchronized on multiple servers. Replicating data to multiple servers increases data availability and gives users in remote sites fast, reliable access to files. DFSR used Remote Differential Compression, or RDC, which replicates only the changes in files. In Windows Server 2008, DFSR can replicate sysvol using RDC, resulting in a dramatic reduction in bandwidth consumption. As we go through today's sessions, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To assist you, we have listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It will help to have experience with supporting Windows servers. This presentation revolves around Windows servers, especially file servers. You should be somewhat familiar with the Remote Sharing Protocol, SMB, and how clients access shared files over the network. You should be familiar with storage solutions that combine multiple servers and storage devices, such as distributed storage and clustering. To cover the topics mentioned on the earlier slide and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. We'll start by reviewing the new features of the file server role in Windows Server 2008. We'll talk about the new SMB 2.0 protocol, transactional file I/O, server backup, and the Storage Explorer. Next, we'll talk about using the new offline files feature to keep local and remote folders in sync. We'll take a look at failover clustering and implement this feature in a demonstration. Finally, we will discuss Distributed File System, DFS, and take a look at the new replication features. The move to Windows Server 2008 can help you realize a more secure environment. To help measure and map out these improvements, we've developed a process model called the Infrastructure Optimization Model. The IO model from Microsoft helps customers understand and subsequently improve the current state of their IT infrastructure and what that means in terms of cost, security risk, and operational agility. Dramatic cost savings can be realized by moving from a basic unmanaged environment towards a dynamic environment. Security improves from highly vulnerable in a basic infrastructure to dynamically proactive in a more mature infrastructure. Windows Server 2008 Active Directory Domain Services is the foundation for many of the new security, management, and automation features that can help you move more easily towards a dynamic and people-ready environment. Let's start by discussing the vision of the file server in Windows Server 2008. The cost of managing storage can increase the total cost of storage solutions by up to 5 times. That's why Microsoft has implemented new features in Windows Server 2008 that are universal by supporting industry-standard hardware and providing broad protocol support for Direct Attached Storage, DAS, Network Attached Storage, NAS, Storage Area Networks, SAN, Wide Area Network WAN, and Internet Storage Solutions. Microsoft is actively working with partners to provide advanced storage functionality with solutions that combine the manageability of Windows and the latest hardware technology. In today's businesses, storage is distributed across a number of locations and devices. From the data center, to the department, to the branch office, Windows Server 2008 provides broad platform support. Whether at the server, on the desktop, on laptops, a PDA, or a cell phone, the goal is to provide storage capability that is always accessible. To support this goal, Windows Server 2008 introduces a new version of the protocol used for accessing shared files. Server Message Block, SMB Protocol version 2.0, increases network file sharing performance, reliability, and security. Compound packets combine multiple actions into a single request, which greatly reduces the number of round trips made to perform file operations across the network. Buffer sizes have been increased to provide better performance, especially when transferring large files. Durable file handles ensure that file transfers can endure temporary network outages, such as over a wireless network or on high latency connections, without having to reconstruct a session. SMB 2.0 supports symbolic links, a feature which allows an empty file to point to another file and is supported by Unix systems. Many variable sizes, which were previously limited to 16 bits, have been increased to 32 or 64 bits, and file handles have been increased to 16 bytes. This means more clients can access the server, and more files can be shared. Mutual authentication and message signing with support for client-side encryption allow for more secure transfers and protection of data. File system functionality has been enhanced with a highly scalable transaction framework that ensures the overall consistency of file I/O operations in which there are dependencies across multiple files. Transactions were originally developed for databases to ensure that data operations either succeeded entirely or failed in their entirety. This ensures application and system stability by making sure that the data is never left in a partially updated or corrupted state. Now, we are extending that paradigm to the file system. Applications, both distributed and local, are better able to handle failures, faults, and concurrency issues with a transactional model for storage. File transactions improve and simplify with the implementation and testing of file operations for application developers. With a common model for handling file transactions, deployments can be made with less testing overhead. File transactions can also be scripted by IT administrators to give added stability and reliability to in-house tools. The volume and complexity of data that is being processed within the operating system continues to increase. File system transactions leverage transaction support that has been implemented within the Windows kernel. Transactions scale to better handle multiple operations with a database, file system, or registry. With so much data being updated and read throughout multiple sources and clients, transactions ensure data consistency across the board. Microsoft has also made improvement to the way Windows Server 2008 and computers running Unix share files across the network. Microsoft Services for Network File System, NFS, provides a file sharing solution for enterprises that have a mixed Windows and Unix environment. Microsoft Services for NFS enables users to transfer files between computers running the Microsoft Windows Server 2008 operating system and Unix-based computers using the NFS protocol. Microsoft Services for NFS includes three main components. First, the username mapping associates user accounts between Windows and Unix domains. In a heterogeneous network, users have separate Windows and Unix security accounts. Historically, users had to provide a different set of credentials to access files and other resources across system boundaries. To address this issue, username mapping associates Windows and Unix usernames so users logged onto the Unix domain can access NFS shared resources on Windows Server 2008 without logging on separately to the Windows domain and vice versa. Typically, a Unix-based computer cannot access files on a Windows-based computer. A computer running Windows Server 2008 and Server for NFS, however, can act as a file server for both Windows-based and Unix-based computers. Usually, a Windows-based computer cannot access files on a Unix-based computer. A computer running Windows Server 2008 and client for NFS, however, can access files stored on a Unix-based NFS server. Microsoft Services for NFS is an update to the NFS components that were previously available in Windows Services for Unix 3.5. Microsoft Services for NFS includes significant new features. The second component, the Unix Identity Management Active Directory Schema extension, available in Windows Server 2008, includes Unix User Identifier UID and Group Identifier GID fields, which enable NFS clients to look up Unix identity information directly from Active Directory. The third component is Microsoft services for NFS components can be installed on all editions of Windows Server 2008, including 64-bit editions. In past versions of services for NFS, some NFS clients experienced low performance when writing to a Windows NFS server. NFS Server for Windows Server 2008 optimizes write requests and provides significantly improved performance. In addition, the improved NFS kernel architecture eliminates delays in file operations such as create and delete. Services for NFS now supports Unix special devices created with the makenode command. This is especially useful for diskless clients. Now let's take a look at another feature to assist management of mixed resources. Storage Explorer is a tree-structured graphical user interface, GUI, that provides detailed information about the topology of storage area networks, SANs. Storage Explorer utilizes industry-standard APIs to gather information about storage devices in Fibre Channel and iSCSI SANs. Storage Explorer is implemented as a snap-in to Microsoft Management Console, MMC, giving administrators a central management interface that they will already feel familiar with. Storage Explorer provides a tree-structured view of all the components within the SAN, including fabrics, platforms, storage devices, and individual logical unit numbers, LUNs. Detailed configuration information is easily discovered. By right-clicking the interface, the context menu provides access to the TCP/IP management interfaces of each of the individual devices. Storage Explorer provides basic functionality, enabling the administrator to easily monitor and configure storage resources by providing host and device discovery, visualization of the SAN topology, and access to individual device configuration interfaces without having to install expensive and complex third-party applications. Another feature with a simplified user interface is the new Server Backup Utility. The backup feature in Windows Server 2008 provides a basic backup and recovery solution for the server it is installed on. Administrators can use the backup feature in Windows Server 2008 to protect an entire server efficiently and reliably without worrying about the intricacies of backup and recovery technology. New MMC wizards guide administrators through setting up an automatic backup schedule, creating manual backups if necessary, and recovering items or entire volumes. The Windows Server Backup feature in Windows Server 2008 includes the following improvements. Backup uses volume shadow copy service and block-level backup technology to efficiently backup and recover the operating system, files, and folders, and volumes. Administrators can now restore items by choosing a backup to recover from and then selecting items to restore. They can recover specific files from a folder or all the contents of a folder. Backup works with the new Windows recovery tools to make it easier for administrators to recover the operating system. Administrators can recover to the same server, or, if hardware fails, they can recover to a new server that has no operating system. Backup now includes a wizard that guides administrators through the process of creating daily backups. System volumes are automatically included in all scheduled backups. Administrators can manually backup volumes directly to DVD. Backup also retains support for backing up manually to shared folders and hard disks. Scheduled backups are stored on hard disks. Tape is no longer a supported backup media type. Let's take a closer look at the Server Backup interface. We're using a single Windows Server 2008 computer in our demonstrations. This server is running Active Directory domain services and DNS for the contoso.com domain in Seattle. Let's move on to our first demonstration. In this demonstration, we will take a look at the new Server Backup user interface and explore some of the new options, including scheduling a recurring backup. Windows Server Backup provides a set of wizards and other tools to perform basic backup and recovery tasks for the server it is installed on. This feature introduces new technology and replaces the previous backup feature that was available with earlier versions of Microsoft Windows Server. You can use backup to protect the operating system, files, and application data. Backups can be saved to single or multiple disks, CDs, DVDs, or remote shared folders. They can be scheduled to run automatically or manually. The Messages area displays any successful or failed backup and restore operations. We haven't performed any backups yet, so this area is empty. The backup status shows the time and status of the last backup, the schedule for the next backup, and a list of available backup copies that can be restored. Backup stores a maximum of 512 backup copies. However, the maximum number of backups you can store might be less, depending on the storage capacity of the disk and the extent of the changes contained in each backup. You can use the Backup Once wizard to manually backup the server. If you have a scheduled backup set up, you can choose to quickly do a manual backup using the same settings as the scheduled backup. If you don't already have a scheduled backup, or you want to use different settings, choose different options. You can backup all the volumes on the server or exclude volumes that do not contain the operating system or applications. To help protect your server, backup automatically selects the volumes that host operating systems and applications. When you need to recover your server from disk failure or other scenarios in which the computer does not start up, you can use Windows Server Backup and the Complete PC Recovery feature to simplify and speed up the process of recovering your server. This method results in shorter downtime than restoring the server by reinstalling the operating system from installation media and then restoring the data from backups. When using a remote shared folder as a storage location for backups, the user running the backup requires write access to the remote shared folder, as well as membership in the backup operators or administrators group on the computer being backed up. As a security best practice, you should restrict this user account's access to other network resources to reduce the possibility of unauthorized access to the network resources while the account is being used for the backup operation. When using a remote shared folder as a storage location for backups, limit access to the remote shared folder to only the users who should have access to any backup stored in the folder. Files created by the backup process inherit the permissions of the shared folder. In addition to local hard drives, you can manually backup volumes to DVD media. This type of backup helps you recover all volumes contained in the backup and is used only when you need to recover entire volumes. Some examples of when you might need to perform this type of recovery include operating system recovery, disk failure, or natural disaster. When a DVD backup contains all critical volumes, you can use the backup to recover the server operating system by performing a volume recovery. When backups are stored on DVD, you can recover entire volumes only. You cannot recover individual files and folders or application data directly from backups stored on DVD. Backups are compressed when stored on DVD. As a result, the size of the backup on DVD might be smaller than the volume on the server. You can backup to an external hard disk, which supports either USB 2.0 or IEEE 1394 attached to the server. The disk should have about 2.5 times the storage capacity of the data you want to back up. The disk should either be empty or contain data that you don't need to keep because backup will format this disk to make it available for use. Running the backup now would take too long for a demonstration. Using the recover options, you can restore any previous backups. If you need to recover the server operating system, you can use Complete PC Recovery from the setup media and a backup created with Windows Server Backup. You must recover the operating system by recovering all critical volumes, which are volumes that host operating system components. Volumes that do not contain system components will not be restored. You can use the Backup Schedule Wizard to set up and run scheduled backups to an external hard disk. Once you have a backup schedule in place, backups will run automatically each day. When you create a backup schedule, you can backup the entire server or specific volumes only. You can backup all volumes on the server or exclude volumes that do not contain the operating system or applications. To help protect your server, backup automatically selects the volumes that host operating systems and applications. Scheduled backups run at least once a day, but you can also run them more often if needed. Either way, you choose when it is most convenient to run backup. If the disk you want to use is not listed on the specified disks page, click Show All. Then click the checkbox next to each disk you want to be listed on the specified disks page. We recommend that you record the label information on a tag and attach it to each external hard drive. If you need to recover data from the backup stored on the disk, you will use the label information to identify the disk. Windows is now preparing the disk for backup. As an alternative, you can use multiple external hard disks to store the data, and you can rotate them between on-site and off-site storage locations. You can also use this type of strategy to increase the maximum number of available backups. Each external disk can store up to 512 backups, depending on the amount of data contained in each backup. You can increase that maximum by storing backups on multiple disks. This backup has been successfully scheduled. Let's move on to our next topic. We've discussed many of the new storage features in Windows Server 2008. Now, we'll continue exploring new features and take an in-depth look at offline files. There are many scenarios where users would like to have access to shared files when they are not able to connect to the network. Offline files is a feature of Windows Server 2008 that allows a user to access files in a remote network shared folder even when the client has no connectivity with the server. The client computer caches the files from the server and stores them locally. Once offline files has been configured, the caching is completely transparent to the user accessing the files. For example, if the user accesses a file in a shared folder named MyShare on a server named FileServe via the Universal Naming Convention, UNC path, FileServe MyShare path to MyFile, when the user attempts to access the file using the same UNC path without network connectivity to the server, the file will open as usual. Any changes made to the file when disconnected from the network will automatically be synchronized back to the server when the network connection is restored. The offline files feature of Windows Server 2008 allows you to work with files and folders on a remote computer even if you disconnect from the network or the server becomes unavailable on the network. This is especially helpful when using a notebook computer and traveling between locations with and without network connectivity, or in locations with intermittent network connectivity. Offline files are cached locally on your computer when you establish the relationship, and then you are automatically synchronized whenever you are connected to the network resource. Offline files has been significantly improved in Windows Server 2008. When you connect to the network, you can transition the offline file status to online without waiting for all cached files to be synchronized. For example, if you have offline files configured on a notebook computer and have been working offline, you can connect to the network and change your working status to online without waiting for all of your offline files to completely synchronize. If you have open file handles on your local computer when connecting to the network, the open file handles will be converted to file handles on the server without requiring you to close the files. For example, you can have a file open in Microsoft Word when you reconnect to the network. Rather than being prompted to close the file before synchronizing, the file handle will transition to the server, and you can keep the file open in Word without issue. In Microsoft Windows XP, if a single file cannot be synchronized, then the entire server is considered offline, and no shares on the server can be accessed, whether these shares are cached in local store or not. In Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008 operating systems, file availability is determined at the individual file level. If a single file is unavailable, yet other files in the same share and other shares are available, those files will still be available online. This provides better interoperation with the distributed file system, DFS. Sync Manager is improved in Windows Server 2008. New features include reporting synchronization errors, listing the files with errors, and providing multiple options for resolving synchronization conflicts when files have been modified offline. The property page for any file or folder has an offline files tab that provides status and allows control of the offline status of the file or folder. To access this page, right-click a file or folder, click Properties, and then click the offline files tab. Offline files can be enabled by policy on the client. A group policy object, GPO, can be set to create a share or to make a path available offline. If folder redirection, in Telemir, has been deployed, then offline files are automatically enabled. Folder redirection applies to the GPO to the My Documents folder after redirecting the folder to a server. Let's give it a try on our demonstration computer. In this demonstration, we will configure offline files and then use the Properties dialog box to make a shared folder available offline. To establish offline caching and to share a folder on the server computer, you must be a member of the Local Administrators or Domain Administrators group. We don't have a sharing folder set up yet, so let's create one called Documents. Let's quickly add a sample text file to our share. Here's the sample text file for our share. Now let's share the folder. We'll make this document's share available to all domain users. Now we need to make sure that our users can write files to the share. We'll set the permission level to contributor. Now our share is available on the network. Now we need to set our caching options. To do that, we need to go to the properties of the share folder and choose Advanced Sharing from the Sharing tab. The default setting for shared folders is to be available for manual file caching. You can also force the files to be available offline. This would be handy if you wanted to make sure that users always had access to a personal documents folder, for example. Caching can also be disabled for a shared folder to prevent users from making the folder contents available offline. We'll leave this setting at the default. Let's go to another computer on the network and open the share. Our client computer is running Windows Vista. Windows Vista is designed to work well with the new offline folders feature. We can browse to our server and see the document share. We have to connect to the share before we have the option to make the files available offline. Here's our text file. Now, if we open the properties for the share, we can view the offline file settings on the Offline Files tab. The folder is currently online. Selecting Always Available Offline will create a local copy of the folder. The initial synchronization, the process by which the local version of the file and the server version of the file are established, can take some time. This is a function of how many files and how much data is being made available offline. This synchronization happens in the background. Now let's disconnect from the network. To simulate being disconnected, we're going to disable the network card. This can be done in the Network and Sharing Center. Now we are no longer connected to the network. Let's take a look at our shared folder now. Back in the Documents folder, we can see that the status is currently offline. We can still access the files in the folder even though we are currently offline. We can also make updates to the files. When we save our changes, the file is updated locally. Let's go back to our server for a minute. Here's our original text file. If we open it, we see that this is still our original file because the client computer that we made the changes on has not yet reconnected to the share. Let's create another copy of this file on the server. We'll call it textfile 2. Now there are two files on the server share. Our original text file, textfile 1, and a copy called textfile 2. Let's go back to our Windows Vista-based client computer. We can see that we still have only one file. Let's connect to the network again. We'll let Windows Vista diagnose the problem. Windows Vista recognizes that the network adapter on this computer is disabled. Rather than providing instructions to enable the network adapter, Windows Vista will enable it for you. This process is meant to be user-friendly. By enabling the network adapter for the user, the network diagnostics framework is designed to reduce calls to the help desk. Remember, users won't have to go through this step to sync their offline files in real usage scenarios. We're simply using this feature to simulate reconnecting to the network. After enabling the network adapter, the computer is again connected to the network, but is unable to connect to the internet. This is because we are running on a closed network. Now let's go back to our share. We can see that the files seem to have been automatically synchronized. Here's text file 2. Just to make sure that both sides of the process are working, let's go back to our server. Let's open the text file that we modified on the client. We can see that our modifications have been successfully synchronized to the server. The process of this and any other user-initiated synchronization can be monitored through Sync Manager. To open Sync Manager, click Start, click All Programs, click Accessories, and then click Synchronize. Once an offline files relationship has been established, Sync Manager also appears in the notification area. It's important to make sure that shared files are always available. Next, let's take a look at how failover clustering can improve the reliability and data integrity of the file server. Clustering has been in previous versions of Windows Server, but in Windows Server 2008, it's introduced major areas of enhancement. In Microsoft Windows Server 2008, the improvements to failover clusters, formerly known as server clusters, are aimed at simplifying clusters, making them more secure, and enhancing cluster stability. A number of new or enhanced configuration, management, and diagnostic features have been added to make setting up and managing the clusters easier for IT professionals and to help eliminate single points of failure and provide higher availability. Administrators can use the new validation wizard to test compatibility to determine whether a system, storage, and network configuration is suitable for a cluster. The wizard will help identify and resolve issues that would prevent setting up a cluster. Enhancements in cluster setup make it easier to get started with a new cluster. The cluster setup wizard has been simplified so that administrators can set up a cluster in one step. Cluster setup is also fully scriptable so that administrators can automate cluster deployment. The cluster migration tool can be used to assist migration of a cluster configuration from one cluster to another. It copies resources and cluster configurations from one cluster to another. In Windows Server 2008, security improvements in failover clusters, such as Internet Protocol Security, IPsec, enhance authentication and encryption. Windows Server 2008 provides the following new features or enhancements to cluster security. Improved disk fencing for shared disks. Windows Server 2008 contains an enhanced mechanism to use persistent reservations and a new algorithm for managing shared disks. It no longer uses SCSI bus resets, which can be disruptive on a SAN. With failover clustering in Windows Server 2008, disks are never left in an unprotected state. Windows Server 2008 contains an improved security model in which the cluster service now runs in the context of the local system built-in account. This increases security and enhances account password management. Administrators can configure a cluster so that the quorum resource is not a single point of failure using the two cluster models that previously existed, the quorum resource model and the majority node set model, or a hybrid of the two. Administrators can use auditing to capture information about who accessed a cluster and when it was accessed. Windows Server 2008 contains a new security enhancement that lets the administrator set inter-node communication to be encrypted. Windows Server 2008 provides the following failover cluster enhancements to provide flexibility to meet changing business needs. With failover clusters in Windows Server 2008, administrators can carry out management and operation tasks more easily than with server clusters in previous releases. The interface for administering a cluster is more intuitive, making it easier to perform such tasks as making a shared folder highly available. Administrators can focus on managing their applications, not their cluster. Administrators can use the command line or WMI for even more tasks than in previous versions. The debug cluster log has been enhanced so that administrators can use event tracing for Windows to easily gather, manage, and report information about the sequence of events that occurred on the cluster. Full integration with the Volume Shadow Copy service makes it easier to backup and restore cluster configurations. Administrators can control or scope their view of shared folders, so it is easy to understand which shared folders are clustered and in which cluster a shared folder is available. Geographically dispersed clusters are now designed to be stretched across sites. In Windows Server 2008, cluster nodes can now reside in different subnets. This allows cluster nodes to communicate across network routers and frees IT staff from having to connect nodes with VLANs. The enhanced infrastructure also allows stretching cluster nodes over greater distances to remove cluster distance limitations. With failover clusters in Windows Server 2008, network performance and security are improved compared to previous releases. Administrators can use Internet Protocol version 6, IPv6, which is fully integrated into failover clusters. Failover clusters fully support IPv6 for both node-to-node and node-to-client communication. Domain name system, DNS, can be used without legacy net BIOS dependencies. This simplifies the transfer of server message block SMB traffic and means that administrators do not have Windows Internet Naming Service WINS and NetBIOS name resolution broadcasts. With failover clusters in Windows Server 2008, administrators can achieve better performance with storage than was possible with server clusters in previous releases. Administrators can modify resource dependencies while resources are online, which means they can make an additional disk available without interrupting access to the application that will use it. When a failover cluster communicates with a storage area network, SAN, or with a direct attached storage, DAS, it uses the least disruptive commands, avoiding SCSI bus resets. Disks are never left in an unprotected state, meaning the risk of volume corruption is lowered. Failover clusters also support improved methods for disk discovery and recovery. GUID partition table, GPT disks, can have partitions larger than 2 terabytes and have built-in redundancy in the way partition information is stored, unlike master boot record MBR disks. With failover clusters, administrators can use either type of disk. Maintenance mode is improved so that administrators can run tools to check, fix, backup, or restore disks more easily and with less disruption to the cluster. Let's set up a cluster. In this demonstration, we'll use the Cluster Configuration Validation Wizard to check our servers and hard drives. Before creating a cluster, we should validate our configuration. Validation helps confirm that the configuration of servers, network, and storage meets the specific requirements for failover clusters. To run the Validation Wizard, we must know the names of the servers and must be a local administrator on each of the servers. we'll enter the names of our servers, SCADC01 and SCASRV01. It's recommended that you run all tests unless you are running the validation wizard again to verify results after making a change. Before the tests are run, the wizard asks us to confirm the settings. We are going to run the tests on SCADC01 and SCASRV01. The validation wizard is now performing all the tests on both servers. As each test is completed, the results are updated in the results window. Before running the validate a configuration wizard for a failover cluster, you should make preparations, such as connecting the networks and verifying the storage needed by the cluster. It is strongly recommended that you use identical hardware in all clustered servers, meaning hardware components that are the same make, model, and firmware version. This makes configuration easier and eliminates potential compatibility issues. Let's take a look at the report. Microsoft supports a cluster solution only if the complete configuration, servers, network, and storage can pass all tests in the validated configuration wizard. In addition, all hardware components in the cluster solution must carry the Design for Windows Server 2008 compatibility logo. The inventory tests provide an inventory of the hardware, software, and settings, such as network settings, on the servers, along with information about the storage. The network tests validate that networks are set up correctly for clustering. This includes verifying that there are at least two network adapters for each server and verifying that each network adapter has a different IP address. The storage tests validate that the storage on which the failover cluster depends is behaving correctly and supports the required functions of the cluster. Since we do not have a storage area network, SAN device attached, our validation tests are canceled. The system configuration tests validate that system software and configuration settings are compatible across servers. The rest of the report contains detailed information about the results of each test. There is detailed information to help you understand the test results in the Windows Server 2008 help topic, Understanding Cluster Validation Tests. Now we'll take a look at the final piece of our unified distributed file system vision for Windows. We've looked at a lot of the new features of file servers in Windows Server 2008. For the last feature, we'll take a look at distributed file system, DFS. The distributed file system replication, DFSR service, is a multi-master replication engine that is used to keep folders synchronized on multiple servers. Replicating data to multiple servers increases data availability and gives users in remote sites fast, reliable access to files. Replication is configured via DFS namespaces. DFS namespaces allow you to group shared folders located in different servers by transparently connecting them to one or more namespaces. A namespace is a virtual view of shared folders in an organization. When you create a namespace, you select which shared folders to add to the namespace, design the hierarchy in which those folders appear, and then determine the names that the shared folders show in the namespace. When a user views the namespace, the folders appear to reside on a single high-capacity hard disk. Users can navigate the namespace without needing to know the server names or shared folders hosting the data. The path to a namespace is similar to a universal naming convention, UNC path, of a shared folder, such as Contoso, Public, Software, Tools. If you're familiar with UNC paths, you know that in this example, the shared folder, Public, and its subfolders, Software and Tools, are all hosted on the server Contoso. Now assume that you want to give users a single place to locate data, but you want to host data on different servers for availability and performance purposes. To do this, you can deploy a namespace. A namespace server hosts a namespace. The namespace server can be a member server or a domain controller. The root is the starting point of the namespace. In our example, the name of the root is public, and the namespace path is /contoso/public. This type of namespace is known as a domain-based namespace because it begins with the domain name, for example, Contoso, and its metadata is stored in Active Directory. Although a single namespace server is used in our example, a domain-based namespace can be hosted on multiple namespace servers. Folders help build the namespace hierarchy. Folders can optionally have folder targets. When users browse a folder with targets in the namespace, the client computer receives a referral that directs the client computer to one of the folder targets. A folder target is a UNC path of a shared folder or another namespace that is associated with a folder in a namespace. In our example, the folder name Tools has two folder targets, one in Seattle and one in New York, and the folder name Training Guides has a single folder target in Seattle. A user who browses to Contoso Public Software Tools is transparently redirected to the shared folder CServe01Tools or NYCServer01Tools, depending upon the closest site where the user physically located. DFSR uses Remote Differential Compression, RDC, which replicates only the changes in files. In Windows Server 2008, DFSR can replicate sysfol using RDC, resulting in a dramatic reduction in bandwidth consumption. Let's take a closer look. In this demonstration, we'll explore the Distributed File System DFS Management Console and create a new namespace to deploy DFS replication. The DFS Management Snap-in is the graphical user interface tool for managing DFS namespaces and DFS replication. This snap-in is new and differs from the Distributed File System snap-in in Windows Server 2003. Before we begin using DFS namespaces and DFS replication, let's quickly review the components of this snap-in. The console tree has two nodes, namespaces and replication, from which you can manage namespaces and DFS replication. The namespaces node contains the namespaces you create, as well as any existing namespaces you add to the console display. We haven't created any namespaces yet. If there are namespaces listed here, there would be a hierarchical view of the folders associated with that namespace. The replication node contains the replication groups you create, as well as any existing replication groups that you add to the console display. A replication group represents a group of servers that participates in the replication of data. The action pane shows two types of tasks: common tasks, and tasks that apply to the selected object. If the action pane is not visible, you can open it by clicking the View menu, clicking Customize, and then clicking the Action Pane option in the Customize View dialog box. Let's create a new namespace to publish our shared folders. A namespace allows you to group shared folders located on different servers by transparently connecting them to a virtual view of shared folders. A namespace server hosts a namespace. The namespace server can be a member server or a domain controller. We'll use our domain controller, SCADC01, as the namespace server. The root is the starting point of the namespace. In our example, the name of the root is going to be public. Use edit settings to change the local path of the shared namespace folder. By default, this is C:\DFS roots, and then the name of the namespace root. Let's set security permissions so that administrators have full permissions and other users can read and write to the share. We can choose either a domain-based namespace or a standalone namespace. The domain-based namespace begins with a domain name, for example, Contoso, and its metadata is stored in Active Directory. A domain-based namespace can be hosted on multiple namespace servers. A standalone namespace is stored only on the namespace server, but it can be hosted on a server cluster. The path begins with the namespace server name. A dedicated namespace server should be used to host a namespace that contains more than 5,000 replicated folders. The namespace is being created. When the wizard finishes, the new namespace will be added to the console tree. We now have an empty namespace called public. We need to create some folders to organize our share. Let's create a folder called software. We won't specify a target folder. We can create targetless folders for organizational purposes. Let's create another folder under software called tools. This time we'll give it a target. Let's set /SEADC01/tools as our target folder. We have not created a share for our tools on our server yet, so we're prompted to create it now. We'll set the local path on our server to the C:\tools folder and set the permissions to read only, except for administrators. Because the local folder does not yet exist on our server, we're asked if we want to create it. We'll answer yes. Notice that the tools folder has a different icon than the software folder. This indicates that the folder has a target associated with it. Let's take a closer look at our tools folder. Notice that there is a single path shown for folder targets. This means that only one server hosts the folder target that corresponds to the tools folder. If that server becomes unavailable, the shared folder is also unavailable. To increase the availability of the tools folder, we can add a second folder target. We have a second server, SEASRV01, that we can use to host our target. Since we did not create a share on SEASRV01, we're prompted to do that now. As with the first server, we need to enter a local path for the tools folder on SEASRV01. We'll use the same permissions here. We'll choose yes to create the new tools folder on SEASRV01. We could set up replication now to keep the folders on SEASRV01 and SEADC01 in sync. However, we're going to do that later in the demonstration, so we'll choose no. Now our tools folder has two targets, one on SEADC01 and one on SEASRV01. Later, we'll connect to Contoso.com software tools with a client and talk about how the appropriate target is chosen using referrals. In this task, we're going to walk through the process of deploying DFS replication. Let's create a replication group to replicate the document share that created in an earlier demo. For this scenario, we're going to use multipurpose replication. We'll talk more about replication for data collection later in the demo. We'll call our replication group Document Distribution. Let's add our two servers, SEADC01 and SEASRV01, to the replication group. We'll use the full mesh topology so that both servers replicate with each other. We'll use the default option to replicate continuously using full bandwidth. Let's use SEADC01 as the primary member. When you first set up replication, you must choose a primary member. Choose the member that has the most up-to-date files that you want replicated to all other members of the replication group, because the primary member's content is considered authoritative. This means that during initial replication, the primary member's files will always win the conflict resolution that occurs when the receiving members have files that are older or newer than the same files on the primary server. After the initialization of the replicated folder, the primary member designation is removed. The member that was previously the primary member is then treated like any other member, and its files are no longer considered authoritative over those of other members that have completed initial replication. Now let's add a folder to be replicated. Let's use the Documents folder that we created in a previous demonstration. Let's set up the local path on SCASRV01 to be the same local path, C:\documents. Since the folder does not exist on SCASRV01, we will be asked if we want to create it. A replication group is a set of servers, known as members, that participates in the replication of one or more replicated folders. We have chosen to create a new replication group with two members, SCADC01 and SCASRV01. When you create a new replication group, replication does not begin immediately. The topology and DFS replication settings must be replicated to all domain controllers, and each member in the replication group must pull its closest domain controller to obtain these settings. The amount of time this takes depends on Active Directory replication latency and each member's long polling interval, 60 minutes. Here is our new replication group document distribution. There are four tabs in the Details pane: Memberships, Connections, Replicated Folders, and Delegation. Each of these tabs displays different details about the selected replication group. On the Memberships tab, the entries are sorted by replicated folder. Under the Replicated Folder, Documents heading, we can see that the replication members that host the Documents folder. You can use the Properties menu to view and modify per member, per replicated folder properties. For example, on the Advanced tab, you can view the location and size of the staging folder and conflict and deleted folder on the selected member. On the Connections tab, two connections are listed. Each connection is a one-way replication path, so replication between two members requires two connections that replicate data in the opposite direction. Each connection has settings available through Properties menu, such as a checkbox for enabling or disabling remote differential compression, RDC. Each connection also has a schedule. We have set up this replication group to always replicate, but if we had set up a scheduled replication, we would be able to view the schedule using the View Schedule button on the Schedule tab. On the Replicated Folders tab, the replicated folder, Documents, is listed. We have not yet published our folder to a namespace. On the Delegation tab, review the default users and groups granted permissions to manage the replication group. Any users or groups shown as inherited have inherited management permissions from Active Directory, and you cannot remove them from the delegation list using the DFS management snap-in. When we created replicated folders in the previous task, we specified the local path of a folder on each member of the replication group. To make the replicated folders available to users, we must share them. We can also publish them in an existing namespace. First, we'll set up the shared folder settings for SCADC01. Because we already have a share for the Documents folder set up on SCADC01, we can use the existing share. Let's check the settings for SCASRV01. Because we have not set up a share on SCASRV01, we can create a new share called Documents. We'll use the same permission settings that we originally used to set up SCADC01. We have to add the folder to an existing namespace. Let's add it to the root of our public namespace in the Contoso domain. Let's review what we've selected in the wizard. We're going to share the Documents replicated folder and publish it in a namespace. We're going to use the existing document share on our domain controller, SCADC01, and create a new share called Documents on our file server, SCASRV01. We're going to publish the documents folder to the domain-based namespace public on the contoso.com domain. The wizard will automatically create the folders and assign the appropriate targets in our namespace. The wizard is now creating the appropriate shares and updating the namespace. This automation saves the time it would take to complete each of these steps manually. The documents folder was added to the contoso.com public namespace, and the icon has an indicator showing that the folder has targets and it is replicated. Now the content between the two shares will be identical, and connecting clients will be able to access either share transparently. Let's talk about how referrals work. A referral is a list of targets that a client computer receives from a domain controller or namespace server when the user accesses a namespace root or folder with targets in the namespace. The referral tells the client which servers host the associated root target or folder target. When a client requests a referral, the distributed file system service takes into account the site of the client and the site of the target and provides a referral with targets that are ordered according to the current referral ordering method. By default, targets in a client site are listed first in a referral in random order, followed by a list of targets outside of the client site, sorted by lowest cost. To fine-tune how targets outside of a client site are ordered, you can change the ordering method for an entire namespace or for individual folders with targets. Changing the ordering method is an important consideration in namespaces whose targets span sites. For example, there might be situations in which you want to prevent the client from accessing targets outside of its own site. If so, you can configure the namespace root or folder with targets so that clients receive referrals only for targets within their own site. To further optimize how targets are listed in referrals, you can set target priority, which overrides the ordering method. For example, you can specify that a target is always first or last in a referral, regardless of the client site, or you can specify that a target is always first or last among the targets that have the same connection cost. One common scenario for using target priority is when you have a hot standby server that is considered the server of last resort. In this scenario, you can specify that the standby server always appears last in referrals, and clients will fail over to this server only if all the other servers fail or become unavailable due to network outages. Let's examine our namespace share as it will appear to our client computers. We'll open Explorer and enter /contoso.com/public into the address bar. Here we can see the folders we created under the public namespace. Notice that both folders look the same to the client. There is no indication that one is redirected to a target server. Here are the text files we created in an earlier demonstration. Even though they are hosted on SEADC01 and replicated to SEASRV01, we can access them through the URL based on the domain name. We can also use the properties to view the DFS properties of a namespace folder on the client. The referral list displays the targets in the folder referral that the client received when it accessed contoso.com public documents. The target marked active is the target currently connected to our client computer. Namespaces make connecting to the network resources easier to use and more reliable. Another useful scenario for replication is a hub and branch or centralized service for data collection. For example, you might want to collect data from remote servers to a centralized server where the data can then be backed up by a central authority. Let's call the new replication group Central Backup. Let's assume that SEASRV01 is the remote server or branch server. Now, we need to add the folders that we want to back up. We'll need to create a new folder called Backup as an example. To better illustrate how this works with multiple folders, let's add another folder called Backup 2. We're going to use our domain controller, SEADC01, to represent our central server. Notice that we specify a single folder on the destination or hub server to contain all of our target folders. This is different than multipurpose replication, where each folder has a one-to-one mapping. We'll allow the wizard to create our destination folder. Because this is a centralized backup, let's schedule to run periodically instead of constantly. We have a lot of control over when the replication occurs. In our scenario, let's say we want to allow the most bandwidth during off hours, between midnight and 4 a.m. We can select that block of time and adjust the bandwidth accordingly. We may want to adjust the schedule slightly to allow for emergency patches that occur on Sundays. We can easily change just the settings for Sunday to keep the bandwidth use for replication down to a set value. Now we will have limited network bandwidth use for replication on Sunday. Finally, we'll confirm the settings and create the replication group. Our folders and replication group have been created with the specified schedule. You can create a diagnostic report to check the status of replication. We can choose to create a health report or perform a propagation test. This is useful in scenarios where you want to test a particular deployment or to troubleshoot a network problem. We'll go ahead and create a health report. We can choose the path and file name for the report. We'll use the default settings for now. On the Members to Include page of the wizard, we can include or exclude member servers from the report. We'll leave both of our servers as included members. On the Options page, we can choose whether we want to count backlogged files. As a reference, we need to specify the member server that we believe has the most up-to-date copy of the files. We could turn this option off, if there are a lot of backlogged files, to save time. Since we know we only have a few files, let's turn on the option to count all of the replicated files and calculate their sizes. Now we'll create the report. The diagnostic report is an HTML file that includes error and warning events and replication statistics for each member of the replication group. The DFS replication bandwidth savings calculates the efficiency savings. This savings will change over time as files are added and changed. If there were any errors or warnings regarding DFS replication, they would appear here. These are typically event log errors that appear in the member's respective DFS replication event log. In the information section for each member, the replicated folder status and other information is displayed. The status will be normal after initial replication is complete. Notice that the primary member shows different statistics from the non-primary member. This is because data originated from the primary member and replicated to the non-primary member during initial replication. That just about wraps up this session. Let's review what we've covered so far. Protecting and ensuring the availability of user files and data is one of the most fundamental requirements for IT. U.S.-based businesses spend over 12 billion U.S. annually, or 8.9256 billion euros, recovering lost data. Add the impact that lost data has on productivity, and the cost is far greater. More than one-third of data loss is attributed to human errors, such as accidental file deletions or overwriting. Windows Server 2008 provides enhanced file server features, such as offline files, server backup, and failover clustering, that enable IT professionals to more effectively protect this data while enabling end users to more easily recover from mistakes. Enterprise storage requirements are growing exponentially. The amount of data stored on file servers is estimated to double every 12 to 18 months. Yet, an increasing number of administrators need to manage growing IT environments with the same number or fewer staff members. As the cost of storage devices declines, the costs of housing and managing them increase. Windows Server 2008 provides support for managing storage area networks, SANs, with Storage Explorer, improved server backup management, transactional file I/O for improved data consistency and application reliability, and enhanced support for mixed Unix environments with NFS. As networks expand to include more users, physical storage devices continue to multiply and increase infrastructure complexity across the enterprise. This proliferation makes it increasingly difficult for server administrators to keep users connected to the files they need. Users that store and edit documents and many shares scattered on multiple servers will be more productive by accessing this data through a single unified namespace made possible by DFS. In addition, if a server fails or an upgrade is taking place, users are automatically routed to another available server on the network that has a replica of the data. The user remains unaware of any problem or maintenance taking place. Finally, DFS transparently redirects users to the closest replica of their data, reducing stress on the network. In addition, improvement to the SMB protocol reduces network traffic and improves the security and performance of file transfers. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information about Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ADD-200 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, MS Pressbooks, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals, support, and implement solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. There are 22 online and instructor-led courses available that cover Microsoft Windows Server 2008. One of the most useful is 5934, which is an online collection composed of 5 clinics, where you are introduced to the new features and functionality in Windows Server 2008. 5939 is another online clinic where you learn the new tools and improved features for server management and administration of Windows Server 2008. This includes PowerShell task automation, remote administration, performance, and diagnostic tools. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which has links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There is also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to become a fully certified System Administrator, MCSA, or System Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. The new Microsoft Certified Technology Specialist, MCTS, and Microsoft Certified IT Professional, MCITP credentials provide IT professionals with a simpler and more targeted framework to showcase their technical skills in addition to the skills that are required for the specific job roles. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you may find interesting. To help explain this further, here's Ian Brackenbury, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed newsgroups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions and, through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.